resolution. I'm going to try not to start the show with a sigh.
Okay. Here's a topic. It's not something that I've seen discussed. It's just something that I've been knocking around in my head that I'm curious about. You know how Republicans used to be virulently anti-communist? I mean, we're talking Joe McCarthy, Richard Nixon, anti-communist. And, you know, now we've gone from having a communist USSR as a potential adversary to having what I think can be fairly called a very right-wing fascistic Russia as a potential adversary. And I think a lot of liberals have been kind of scratching their heads about how can the Republicans just kind of not be taking seriously this connection, allegedly, between Trump and Russia. You know, 40 years ago, I can't even imagine that they would have been as laid back about this as they seem to be now. And, you know, the only thing that occurs to me, and this is something we can discuss, because even though we're doing fundraising, we are going to have a couple of open lines for call-ins. The only thing that occurs to me is, while the conservative Republican Party, and it's always been conservative to one degree or another, the conservative Republican Party was very, very anti-communist, anti-socialist, anti-atheist. And it's like now you've got Putin. Putin is very right-wing. He's very anti-homosexual. He loves big corporations because his friends mostly own them. He's very pro-religion, Greek Orthodox, I'm sorry, Roman, Russian Orthodox, Serbian Orthodox, etc., Eastern Orthodox, essentially. And I'm thinking to myself, maybe the reason the Republicans seem so not worked up over this Trump-Russia connection is that they see the potential for some kind of ideological kinship between a very conservative Republican Party and a really conservative, pretty much fascistic Russia. I mean, think about it. Russia's no longer atheist. They're no longer communist. They're no longer socialist. I think a lot of conservatives, when they start to think about it, it's like, so what are we opposed to? Just a thought. Okay, here's how we're going to do this today. If you want to call in, we have two lines. They roll over, but it's only two lines. 713-526-5752. That would be to talk on the air, and two lines. So, you know, first come, first served. I think that the second line, if it's full, will roll over to our usual call-in line, which is right now Pledge Central. And if you want to support this show and support this station and donate, you know, money, that's 713-526-5738. Now, you can call 713-526-5738, donate money, and then you can call 713-526-5752 and talk on the show. Or you can call 713-526-5752, talk on the show, and then roll over to the donation line. Or if the two talk call-in lines are full, you can either say, thank you, I'd rather talk on the air, or, hey, as long as we've rolled over, let's make a donation to KPFT. Remember that KPFT is 100% community-supported. There are financial straits that we would very much like to get through safely. You know, when you look at the other radio stations in Houston, half of them are owned by five or six companies. There is no other place where you can get liberal, progressive political talk, where progressives and liberals can call in, get not only a sympathetic ear, but actually talk about, you know, actual news and actual facts. Name another station aside from KPFT where you can do that. Now, I would say on average, between 8 and 15% of the people that listen to this station at one time or another have been or are supporting it. And if you have never contributed to support KPFT, we don't want you to stop listening to the station. We love your listenership. Please listen. But if you can, if you never have, if it's been a while, be really great at this time if you would pledge some money, you know, whether whatever you can afford, $5, $15, $500. You know, we're coming to tax season. A little late for it now, but for 2018, you could write off a contribution to KPFT as a tax deduction. So if you itemize your taxes in a bizarre sort of way, the more you give, the more you save. That's how I like to frame it. 713-526-5738. Okay, let's get to some other stuff. Yahoo apparently is buying, I'm sorry, AOL, which is a Verizon company, is buying Yahoo, or AOL and Yahoo is being bought by Verizon. I'm a little puzzled by that, but here's the kicker. They have decided to rename the combined company, not AOL, not Yahoo, not Yowlhoo, or Verihoo, or anything. They've decided to call it Oath. Oath, a Verizon company. That's the technical name for the combined company, Oath. Do you get the feeling that that wasn't focus group tested? So, that's just strange news. Here's something interesting. The founder of Blackwater, who now, I believe, has his corporate headquarters in the United Arab Emirates, arranged a secret meeting in January between Blackwater founder Eric Prince and a Russian who was close to Vladimir Putin as part of an effort to establish a back-channel line of communication between Moscow and President-elect Trump. This is from the Washington Post, reported today, or yesterday, yes, the 3rd. The meeting is supposed to have taken place, I believe, January 9th. January 11th. I'm looking further at my notes. But, you know, this is just like another brick in the wall. You know, conservatives and fascist Russia. It's like it when you start to look at it that way, it starts to make a perverse kind of sense. Though Eric Prince has no formal role with the Trump campaign or transition team, he presented himself as an unofficial envoy for Trump to high-ranking Emiratis involved in setting up the meeting with the Putin confidant, according to officials who did not want to be identified or identify the Russian. Prince was a Trump supporter, contributed a combined $250,000 to the campaign, the party, the super PAC, etc., and, of course, is the brother of Betsy DeVos. There are Democrats up on Capitol Hill that are calling the Russian hack an act of war. This was reported in The Hill. This is from a few days ago. Some Democratic lawmakers are publicly calling out Russia for engaging in war by meddling in the U.S. presidential election. A gentleman by the name of Michael Schmidt, who is an international law professor at the University of Exeter in Britain, told The Hill that the hacking campaign was not an act of war, but rather a violation of two prohibitions, one on violating another state's sovereignty and another on intervention in another state, state's affairs. According to Schmidt, quote, without a scintilla of a doubt, it is not an act of war. This is actually something that came up in my discussion last week with Mark Small, where they had a writ of mandamus before the court, and the argument they used was that American cyber territory had been invaded, and goes to Article 4 of the Constitution, having to do with the sanctity of elections, disturbance by outside powers, etc. And one of the comments that came up in the course of that show, you know, we have had over the decades to evolve what national territory is. So, for example, the national territory used to extend 3 miles beyond the coast. You had a 3-mile limit. The actual technical reason for that 3-mile limit was that was the maximum distance a cannonball could travel. So essentially, as long as you were at least 3 miles off the coast, you could not launch a cannonball at facilities on land. So that was the logic behind the 3-mile limit. With the invention of airplanes, we had to start worrying about airspace. Airspace had never been a concern. It was just air. You breathed it. It was space. You looked up. With the invention of airplanes, we had to make a determination, where is a nation's airspace? And we had to have international treaties defining that. And then when we got the technology to exploit resources in the oceans, then we had to have treaties about national economic zones, which were different from national borders. So the 3-mile limit, or the, I think it's changed to 5 miles now, is still there. But now you have like 200 miles of economic zone that countries have. And when you have a lot of islands, that gets really, really messy. But that's a technology-driven international treaty that had to be established. When we started sending satellites into orbit, well, that created an interesting problem. How far does national airspace go? And I think that they set a limit now of like 50 miles or 75 miles above the ground is the extent of national airspace, so that if you have a satellite orbiting the Earth, it's not constantly invading other countries. So that had to be established. It was an advancement of technology that required a new set of international treaties to sort out where national rights ended and international rights began, essentially where national territory ended and international space or international ocean, essentially, took over. So now we have this cyber era. And we really, we have sort of like tenuous understandings and we have interpretations of laws and treaties. What we don't really have is a treaty, and I think we're going to have to eventually have one, an international treaty defining what is cyber territory. Is there such a thing? If there is such a thing, where does it begin and where does it end? Where is it national and where is it international? What is normal surveying of the cyber landscape, and what constitutes essentially an invasion and an unacceptable disruption, as the case may be, of a country's cyber territory? I think the time is near where that's going to have to be worked out. It's a really, really interesting question that is going to have to be addressed, because there are a lot of Americans who feel like what the Russians did went beyond normal espionage, beyond normal corporate spying, beyond normal political spying, beyond tinkering, you know, giving money to Jill Stein or whoever. There are a lot of Americans who feel like this was a Russian act of war, what they call asymmetric warfare or hybrid warfare. Well, maybe, maybe not. But the fact is that we don't have the rules of the game. And I think we need to start thinking hard about what are going to be the rules of the game. And, you know, a country can establish them unilaterally by simply saying, if you do this, we're going to consider that a hostile act. Or you can go into an international treaty signed by hopefully all or most of the countries of the world, where it's established that if you do this or that, that is an act of war. Whereas if you do some other things, that's just kind of normal use of the internet. And, you know, if someone has really poor security, that's on them. Time's coming. Okay, let's repeat the phone numbers and let's do a station ID. You're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. I've got Bob Gartner on controls. As always, thank you, Bob. I've got Lars in Pledge Central. And what timing?
There is a phone call. I'm going to have to jump on that here.
Okay.
But I want to thank real quick Diana Barney. She dropped in $40 to get us started
thank
here.
You.
So that's partway to our goal now. So if we, I'm going to get this call now and see who else
yes,
we have to thank. But thank you, Diana.
And thank you, Diana. And thank you, Lars. Okay, you can also call in the show. Maybe we want you to call in the donation number, the pledge number first. That number is 713 713- 713-526-5738. 713-526-5738. You can also donate online. You can go to kpft.org, click on the donate icon, and if it doesn't pick it up for you, hopefully you'll go to the drop-down menu, pick Think Wing Radio, and pledge whatever you can afford. You know, we've had tiny pledges. Bob, what was, I've forgotten the number now. It's been a few years. That older woman who was on a fixed income, what did she donate? Something like $15.80, was it?
Yeah, I believe it was.
Something like that. And when she was asked, you know, that's really kind of an unusual number for a pledge. Usually it's kind of round. And she said, well, I've gone through my monthly expenses, and that's the amount I can afford. And you know what? That's a very valuable pledge. That's the most that a woman of limited means could afford, and she felt that KPFT was worth that contribution. And I think it was to this show, which is very, very flattering. But, you know, for the station, just an amazing favor from this woman to donate $15.80 because that's what she could afford. If you can afford $5 a month, $10 a month, 40 bucks a pop, other things you can do, if you have a car sitting in the driveway, it doesn't run, if it has an engine, you can donate it, and then you can take a tax write-off on it. If you have a boat that, you know, whatever the condition is, I think that the requirement is it has a motor, you can donate that, and you can take a tax deduction. It's not getting more valuable sitting in your driveway, I can tell you that. It's not getting more valuable sitting in your storage. You can do a good thing. You can help yourself and help KPFT by donating. If you are driving in a car and you're thinking, and most people listening to the radio are driving in a car, if you're thinking, well, you know, I'd love to help support this show and this station, but, you know, it's dark and I'm driving and I have to dig for my wallet and look at my credit card and I could get killed doing that, and that would seem like a bad idea. But you can perhaps voice dial on Siri or whatever the Microsoft one is called, Cortana, I believe, and you can just say, Cortana, Siri, dial 713-526-5738, and that will connect us. And you don't have to pull out your credit cards. You can give us your name, your contact information, how much you would like to pledge. You can call us back later. We can call you back later. We can send you an email later as a reminder to complete the pledge. There are so many ways that this can be done. And 100% community supported. We have debt from a new transmitter. 100,000 watts, I'm told, is the maximum power on this. This is super, literally, like, super. So we really need your help. If you could call 713-526-5738. And, of course, if you want to talk on the show, we've got a couple of lines for that, too. 713-526-5738. 5-2. Lars is sounding anxious. I hear the breathing in the microphone. Have you got something for us?
I do. I've been waiting with bated breath. Truly bated breath. This is a great start for today's show. Much better than last week. People are responding right away, and we love it. We have an anonymous donation of $75 that, together with Diana's generous contribution, we're already over a quarter of the way to your goal for tonight. So we just need a few more people to call up, and that's 713-526-5738 to make your donation now, and let us know how much you appreciate this platform we have here at Think Wing Radio to talk about the news of the day and the current issues and really get into it without an agenda. If you appreciate having this platform, call us now, 713-526-5738. That'll get you through to me here, and I'll take your pledge here tonight for support. So thank you to Anonymous and Diana so far, but I know there's some other folks out there who are waiting to pledge. So I'm going to give it back to you, Mike.
Thank you so much, Lars. I appreciate it, as always. Okay, do we have a caller? MOD is on the line, so sure, let's get a caller. So just to remind people, 713-526-5752 is the show call-in number during Pledge Week. How you doing, MOD?
It's all good. We're here.
Man, that sounds like the most enthusiastic endorsement you could possibly rustle up.
Yeah, well, I can be silly.
Okay.
I'll tell another joke next time I call in, I promise.
Okay. So what's up this week?
I don't know. I think that's what we're talking. I just want to tap into what you're talking about with the Russia deal. I'm looking. I'm Google, and I do Clinton Foundation deal with Russia, and this page comes up with Snoop's Washington Examiner, and Reuters that 20% of Russia's uranium is purchased through a transnational energy company out of Ukraine, which has $145 million in donations to the Clinton Foundation. So it's, I know you might argue, well, even though it's on the, what we consider a good source, I guess, news, right, outlets, we still can't, but Snoop's is pretty.
Snoop's, you mean, are you talking about Snoop's, Snoop's.com?
Yeah, yep.
You know, I think the issue here is partly that correlation is not causation, as they say in science. I don't think there's any question that a lot of the donors to the Clinton Foundation have the hope that having donated and having Bill Clinton and to some extent Hillary Clinton and perhaps to some extent Chelsea Clinton, that there might be some influence, even subtle influence, to be had. And humans being humans, you know, I'm not going to rule out the possibility that every once in a while there's a thought that, well, you know, so-and-so gave $100 million to the Clinton Foundation. Be nice if we could do something for them. However, so I'm not denying that you can draw these connections. When you have so much money coming in huge chunks from people that are national leaders, corporate leaders, oligarchs, just wealthy people who have agendas, I'm not going to doubt that in their minds, it's not just the tax deduction. It's not just the doing good works. I'm not going to deny that in their minds, there is a hope that somehow, in some way, at some time, they'll be able to buy some influence. And I have no doubt that the Clintons, being human, wrestle with that. But here's the thing. They are one of the most, I mean, like the Clintons are probably the most investigated political family in American history. The Clinton Foundation, because of conservative concerns, is probably the most investigated charitable organization possibly in world history. And the thing is, they come out looking cleaner than even the Red Cross, which is a pretty well-run charitable organization, which puts an enormous fraction of the money given to its good work as opposed to administrative and fundraising. So I think, you know, I think to some extent both of us are a little bit beating a dead horse here.
Well, yeah, I know, Mike, but I guess I always try to verify my source of information. And the mining company is called Uranium One. I'm looking at Snopes right now, and originally based out of South Africa, but merged in 2007 with Canada-based Eurasia Energy shareholders. I'm not going to read the whole dissertation, but it's a Russian energy company and completed the purchase at 51%. Hillary Clinton played part of the transaction because it's involved in transfer of ownership of a material deemed important to national security, uranium, amounting to the one-fifth of the U.S. reserves. So what I would say to that point, and I can let it go from there, I probably won't call in and mention the foundation again, but it's actually this. It's how things are done, Mike, and that's why.
I will agree with you there. It is how things are done, and we little people are really just cogs in the machine of the 1 or 2 or 3% in the world that really control pretty much everything financially and economically. On that, I think we can agree.
Yeah, well, I always just follow the money, you know, and, mm-hmm. and business as usual. I mean, if we look at the Trotskyites, which are Pearl and Crystal and Abrams and all the folks that are neoconservatives, they're actually Trotskyites.
Let me ask you a question.
That's neocon. That's neoconservatism. It's from Trotsky.
We don't have a bunch of lines for call-in during the fundraising, so I want to ask you a quick question and maybe get a quick answer and then go on to Scott. Would that be okay?
Of course.
Did you hear the beginning of my show?
I heard
about
the Russia beating a dead horse on. I think it's more or less, Mike, it's a dialectic, meaning we can talk about, you know.
Well, I'm just curious to get your opinion.
Right?
You
and
go.
Then,
I'm
transfer of wealth is going on.
No, no, no. I'm not talking about transfer of wealth now. This is a totally different deal. At the beginning of the show, I threw out my notion. I'm not even going to call it a hypothesis or theory. I threw out my notion that perhaps a reason why the Republicans are not bending themselves in pretzels over this Russia thing is because Russia is no longer communist, it's no longer atheist, it's no longer socialist, and I think maybe a lot of conservatives are suddenly wondering, so what's our beef with Russia? If they're not anti-capitalist, if they're not atheistic, if they're not against God, they're capitalists, they're oligarchs, they're conservative, they're pro-religion, they're anti-gay. It's like, what are we against there? And I'm wondering if some conservatives, that the reason that we're not getting the outrage that we might expect is because they're suddenly thinking, you know, what have we really got against the Russians now, except that they're Russia? What are your thoughts on that?
I would say when the wall came down and the guy with the red nose, the guy's named Brezhnev or
Gorbachev?
No,
oh, Yeltsin. Yeltsin.
It was after Gorbachev.
Yeltsin.
When the wall came down and the hard assets that were divvied out to all the, you know, the wealthy people. I don't know if you saw Lord of War. It gives you a small overview of the military surplus that was divvied out. But Russia was pilfered again by, you know, opportunists. And you know, the most wealthiest capita, per capita, meaning the area of people with wealth are three blocks. One's Moscow and two surrounding blocks there. Three have the most concentrated wealth of billionaires. And those folks are one-tenth of 1% of the remaining Bolsheviks. They're crypto Hebrews, let's call them that. I'm not going to be derogatory, but
crypto Hebrews.
Yeah. It's
what the hell is that?
Bolsheviks.
So Bolsheviks are
say,
crypto.
Russia,
hold on. Bolsheviks are crypto Hebrews. So what, like secret Jews?
What are Bolsheviks?
Bolsheviks are Russians or Russian sympathizers who believe in Leninist Marxist philosophy. And some of them were Jews, but most of them weren't.
They were Jews.
Some of them were Jews. Was Lenin a Jew? Was Stalin a Jew? Was Trotsky a Jew? Well, Trotsky might have been a Jew.
That's right. Trotsky and, you know, the social blood parties, the ones that killed 600.
There are only so many Jews in the world to do all the stuff that Jews have been accused of. I have to tell you, I've lost a little respect for you, MOD.
No. Let's talk about this, Mike. We're talking about Bolsheviks.
You're talking about crypto Jews, which is basically another way of saying secret Jews, which is basically to say the Jewish conspiracy. That's what it boils down to.
No, it doesn't, Mike. No, it doesn't.
You used the phrase crypto Jews.
Are you saying the Bolsheviks are real Jews?
Are you saying that they're secret Jews?
Well, when I say crypto, I mean they claim to be. They're what, Khazars or Ashkenazis, actually?
Ashkenazi is the Northern European Jew. A tiny population of the Russian people that were typically thinned out periodically in pogroms. So, I mean, it's not like Russia was so controlled by the Jews and they just did the pogroms as a cover.
There we go. We can agree on that then, okay? So let's just say the Ashkenazis, the Bolsheviks, are...
No. Now, again, you're saying... First, you're saying the Bolsheviks are crypto Jews. Now you're saying the Bolsheviks are the Ashkenazi Jews. And I just can't accept that. That's crazy.
What was Lenin?
Lenin wasn't Jewish.
Yeah, Lenin was Jew.
Lenin was a Jew?
Yes.
I'll have to look that up.
Okay, but don't be upset. I'm talking about the 1/10 to 1% that have all, like, close to half the concentrated wealth in Russia right now.
Well, I mean, in the early 1900s, a lot of Jews were socialists. and a lot of Jews were unionists. And, I mean, Jews, you've had rich Jews, but the rich Jews actually donate an awful lot of money to what you might call good works and social issues. You know what? I apologize because I've only got two lines. And
no, Mike, all I want to try to say is the wealth in Russia, because you went there, and that's not where I wanted to point. The point was the remaining wealthiest Bolsheviks, so you can leave it there. Now, you can call it, you know, don't cascade it to something that's not. And I'm going to stick to the point that 0.1% of Russia's population has like half of the wealth of Russia, and that's called the fifth column, and that has power. And Putin is, you know, like a nationalist almost, so to speak, right? He's KGB.
Well, he is a nationalist. He's a Russian nationalist.
Right. And so he has to, you can't, you know, be that strong, whatever, Orthodox Christian. To me, it's smoke and mirrors. I say it's wealth. I follow the money, and what I see is it's business. And that's what business is, what, you know, even the slush fund, I mean, the Clinton Foundation prior. So what I'm trying to say is these are opportunists, and that's what Trump's ill is coming in. And I'm not disagreeing with what their interest is with Russia. I'm not calling you up to disagree with you on that.
Okay, I just looked it up. It says Lenin's mother was a German-Swedish woman, and his father was a Russian-Jewish physician who had converted to Christianity. So there's a lot of ways you can argue that Lenin was Jewish or not Jewish.
We call them Bolsheviks and just be...
Well, no, they're not the same thing. You can't just say Jews are Bolsheviks and Bolsheviks are Jews.
Please, I'm saying Bolsheviks basically murdered 60 million Christians, and they're called the Blood Party, the Bloodbath.
Well, Bolsheviks promoted atheism, which, by the way, is anti-Jewish.
I'll tell you, the wealthiest ones are still there in Russia. And they're 0.1% of the population. They have over 47% of the wealth.
And what? They're all Ashkenazi Jews?
And I think they are. Yes.
Oh my God! All right. Have a nice night. All right. Take care, MOD.
Peace. Bye.
Bye. Very disappointing. Okay. So, getting back to business. You are listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. Bob Gartner is on the controls. Thank you, Bob. He's the one that enables this call in and talk and call in and donate thing. He proposed the idea. He enables it to happen. I don't know how he does it. I'm grateful for it. Remember that we are also trying to raise money to stay on the air. So if you find these discussions interesting, stimulating, informative, educational, upsetting, joy-making, whatever it is that, you know, because we can cross a whole spectrum in the course of one show, please help support this station. 713-526-5738 is the donation number. Lars, you have anything you want to pitch in here?
Not quite yet, Mike. The phones have been quiet during that last discussion with MOD, but...
Yeah, that was quite a discussion.
Right? I think folks were...
But it was a discussion!
Exactly. I think that's good, and that's the kind of forum you offer here. There's a lot of talk show hosts, not just on this station, but elsewhere in town, who'll get a caller who they don't see eye to eye with necessarily. You hear them out. You have a discussion, a back and forth.
I don't hang up on people,
exactly.
Even if I disagree with them.
Yeah, and it's because of a forum like that people like to listen, like to hear what other people are saying, are open to other ideas because they're heard out. Even if you disagree with them, you'll let them know, but people do get to get their ideas out there. And I think the smart, clear discussion.
How rare is that?
Like I said, it is rare. A lot of times the style of your common talk show host, especially with a political bent, is to be overbearing. Once they get a guest where they feel like they can talk over them because they disagree, they make a sport of it. You don't make a sport of, you know, putting people down on your show. You might disagree with them, but it's never a sport, basically, for people who are on your side to root you on as you put down the other side. I never get that feeling from you. And I think that's, even though people will have their opinions and points of view, it's good to have an open discussion where the ideas can be laid out there and people can agree or disagree who are listening out there. And so that's, I think, a value of your show here this hour that we have on Monday nights. And if folks out there are appreciative of that, of being able to hear hear people being heard. 713-526-5738 if you appreciate this platform. I'm here to take your pledge right now. KPFT is very special in the way it does its programming. It's independent, and it's from the community, of the community. And because we have listener supporters out there, it's financed by the community that appreciates having this forum. So 713-526-5738.
Thank you so much, Lars. Okay, and we do have call-in numbers. Right now, we do have two people on hold, but when a line opens up, that number is 713-526-5752, and Scott is on the line. How are you doing, Scott?
Fine. Thank you. Well, you were talking about cyber territory. I am sure I can listen to you at 5 a.m. in Estonia.
Yes, you can.
Tehran and Havana.
Maybe Havana, maybe not. But
yeah, Havana's 1 or 2 hours ahead of us.
Well, I'm thinking of maybe they have a certain amount of control, you know, like China does. They may have screening software on their internet.
Yeah.
Or maybe I'm too small a fish to worry about. I don't know.
Yeah, and I imagine maybe not too many people can afford computers there.
That's true, too.
Yeah. I'm sure I seriously doubt I can listen to you in Pyongyang.
That's probably
North Korea.
True. And actually, having an internet connection is a privilege of only the very few elite.
I imagine.
It's not even a matter of being able to afford a computer. You don't have internet access.
And China is having its own internet now, so they can erect a bamboo curtain against the rest of the world.
They have, oh man, my wife is on it all the time. They have a chat channel. It's kind of like a combination of Twitter and a bulletin board.
Uh-huh.
Boy, I should know the name of this thing right off the top of my head, but I can't think of it. But it's sponsored or at least monitored by the Chinese government.
Uh-huh.
And it's like everybody in China who uses it knows that they'll be flagged if conversations use certain words or terminologies.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, it's like Twitter with chat rooms. And I keep telling my wife, be careful what you say on there because, you know, Uncle Mao is listening.
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay.
I wish I could remember what it's called. I'm sorry?
I think you said your wife is Chinese.
My wife is originally from Heilongjiang province around the area of Harbin, northeastern China, immigrated
okay,
to Canada. Yeah, I guess so.
Yep. Uh-huh. Yeah.
And she is now a U.S. citizen.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, she worked very hard for that.
Yes.
And that kind of informs, you know, when we go into discussions of illegal immigration, my discussions with her and her friends, to some extent, inform my positions on that.
Yeah. Did you know that Russia has a gay website?
A gay website?
Yes. Yeah, it's had it for some time. And now it says 18 plus. There is a page in English, as well as, of course, pages in Russian. Seems they're not really restricting it too much, but there is trouble there, and there certainly is some trouble in Chechnya.
Yeah, that explosion in the metro, that's horrible.
Yeah.
You know, innocent people just
doing
their business.
Okay, I was talking about arrests and killing of gays in Chechnya.
That too.
That is local.
Now, here's the thing. You know, you say that they have a gay website in Russia. You realize that one of the ways that authoritarians stay in control is to occasionally relax control so that all of their potential adversaries feel this is a time, you know, of freedom. We can come out and talk. And then when they crack down, they know the names.
They can spy on people better.
And so this, you know, this gay website, I have to tell you, for a Russian to visit a gay website is probably an act of civil disobedience right there, because they are putting themselves at risk.
Yeah, it would be risky.
Got anything else, Scott?
I can't think of anything else.
Well, there's always next
you.
Time. Thank you. I appreciate your calling. That's interesting information. Take care. Okay, We have an open line, 713-526-5752. If you call and it rolls over to our Pledge Central, well, I mean, that can be okay. That number directly is 713-526-5738. We're kind of doing this mixture of doing the show and trying to raise money for the station and not making it tedious by constantly hacking for money. Here's something interesting. Apparently, at the U.S. Department of Energy, they allegedly have forbidden certain phrases to be used. Let's see, the way it's put in the Seattle Pie. Staff in the U.S. Department of Energy's Office of International Climate and Clean Energy were instructed by a supervisor this week not to use phrases like climate change, emissions reductions, or Paris Agreement in briefings and written memos or any other written communication. I have to point out that climate change is a Frank Luntz focus-grouped term that the Republicans successfully promoted to replace the term global warming. Because with the focus, Frank Luntz is like an enormous, he's a huge conservative ideological meme asset. It's amazing. What he found in his focus groups is that the term global warming genuinely alarmed people. But the term climate change sounded a little less dangerous. And that became the term that the Republicans were told to use instead of global warming. And the Democrats, along with the media, went ahead and started to use the term climate change, which is less alarming than global warming, which is what climate change is. Not every place will get hotter, but the globe is getting hotter, so it's global warming. Anyway, I just thought that was funny. It's like, oh, I mean, it's funny, not ha-ha. You know, it's like back to 1984, where what we have now is the Ministry of Truth. And the job of the Ministry of Truth is to make sure that nobody actually knows the truth. Everything is a lie. Everything is revisionist history. We have a government we can't believe. So I just thought I'd throw that out. Okay. We have an open line, 713-526-5752. Donation line is 713-526-5738. And Jerry, you're on the air.
Yeah, how you doing?
Okay, how are you?
I'm all right.
What do you got?
Well, I was just going to say, you know, this is, you know, you listen to these people and, it's, you know, it's like people never change, whatever. Lots of times people do change and, you know, you got to watch,
What do you mean that sometimes people change? What do you mean by that?
Well, like MOD sitting there going, well, they're Trotskyists. None of those people who are neocons now are Trotskyists anymore. They started out as Trotskyists. And everything, he's talking mostly about the New York intellectuals and all that. And
was I right to be both offended and red flagged by the term crypto Jew?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And also by crypto-Hebrew, for that matter.
Crypto-Hebrew. Also, to say Bolsheviks and Jews are synonymous?
No.
It's insane, right? That's crazy. I mean,
yeah.
It's just historically not right. It's when you talk about the Jews controlling everything, it's like the Jews don't own Ford, the Jews don't own General Motors. As a matter of fact, if you watch Gentleman's Agreement, the movie, which I strongly recommend because it's about prejudice against Jews, but it could really be prejudice against any group. And
Yeah. They
talk about the post-war period where there was still a lot of anti-Semitism, even after the Holocaust was recent history, where Jews had to change their names to get jobs because they wouldn't hire somebody with a Jewish-sounding name. I mean, I don't know. It's just crazy. Go ahead.
I
think I'm out of words at the moment.
There's Jewish liberals and there's Jewish conservatives and there's
right. Jewish
Trotskyites still out there, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Probably not very many, but I'll bet there are a few out there. And then there's Jewish neocons.
I think the majority of Jews are surprised when they run across a conservative Jew. Not that it's rare. Not that it's rare, but somehow it's always a little surprising.
Yeah. I don't know. They're generally, it's assumed that they're
liberal.
You know, that they're going to tend to be a little more liberal in outlook. Yeah. And all that. But no, I agree with you. And, it's, you know, it's kind of a sad comment about, you know, people don't make differentiations like they need to. And you know, it's just like Irving Kristol. Irving Kristol, yeah, he was a Trotskyist at one time. Well, now he's a neoconservative. What am I supposed to do? Sit there and still call him a Trotskyist?
Do me a favor.
Yeah, that's not going to do anything to me. It's any.
I'm embarrassed.
Anything.
I'm embarrassed
my
to ask.
My interest or his or anybody else's.
Jerry, I'm embarrassed.
It just muddies the water.
I'm embarrassed to ask, but I have to tell you, I need a definition for a Trotskyite. I mean, I know who Trotsky was, but what is a Trotskyite?
A Trotskyite was somebody who basically agreed with Trotsky in how he approached, in how he said that basically, you know, the world revolution should occur and all that other stuff.
All right, can you give me something a little bit more specific?
Basically,
or I'm going to have to look it up.
There should be basically a world revolution, and it should occur, you know, as soon as absolutely possible. Basically,
how did this contradict the Bolshevik worldview, which I, you know, I think was sort of the same in that regard?
It didn't contradict the Lenin so much, but of course Lenin had to deal with certain political realities on the ground. Stalin, of course, this is a contradistinction. Basically, Trotskyites arose in contradistinction to Stalinists. And
in contradiction to Stalinists.
Yeah.
So in other words, would I be correct then in trying to say that a Trotskyite was sort of a retro-Leninist, and with Stalin that time had passed? Now, if you were a retro-Leninist, you were an anti-Stalinist. Is that a fair way to frame it?
Yeah, pretty much. You know, basically, it was the world, you know, basically, he wanted the world, he thought, you know, he wanted to export the revolution right away, and Stalin went one way on that, and then he went the other. Once he got Trotsky out of the way, he kind of, like, followed some of Trotsky's ideas later.
So, really?
He had Trotsky out of the country and everything by then.
And Trotsky was assassinated, I think, in Mexico, right?
Mexico, yeah.
And here's the thing, I guess maybe the reason I remain puzzled is that I don't think, and I'm going to have to do the research on this, but from what I'm hearing, I don't think that there's a lot of difference between a Trotskyite and a Bolshevik, except maybe for timing and which particular individual they supported.
To a certain degree, yeah, that's pretty much the case.
So then to take an American conservative of any stripe and in any way call them a Trotskyite, how does that work?
Well, those guys started out in New York in the 30s as Trotskyites, Irving Kristol and a whole bunch of those
basically
other guys.
Communists of one stripe or another.
Right.
Okay.
Well, or at least Marxian socialists.
Okay.
And all that. But, you know, basically some of them thought along similar lines, you know, like what people who worked right for the Monthly Review or the over there in Great Britain, what's it called, the New Left Review, you know, kind of like they kind of like viewed things sort of like from that perspective already. It was sort of like a preview of what you'd get from those people later.
So what we're talking about here, and I'm going to have to move on in a minute because there are a couple of other topics I want to touch on, or I can keep you on the phone until another person calls and I can touch on the topics. But I think what we're talking about here is that weird, to me, that unfathomable ideological transition from one wing, one philosophical wing to the other. Like, what's her name, Adriana Huffington? Where she
Ariana
went from
Huffington,
being
what
was her first name again?
Ariana. Huffington.
Ariana. Where she went from being a raging conservative to being a raging liberal. I just can't wrap my head around such a philosophical reversal. I mean, I feel like I've been philosophically stable pretty much since I was in high school. Obviously, new events require assimilation of new ideas and new circumstances, but you know, I've always been basically liberal and I move along the spectrum a little bit, but I've always been basically liberal. And for someone to just go, today I'm a conservative, tomorrow I'm a liberal, or today I'm a Trotskyite and tomorrow I'm a neoconservative, I just can't get my head around it.
Well, if you go look at, like, the God that failed, what they do is what, you know, Kessler and some of these other guys sat there and said, Salone and all those, is that, you know, basically it was like there was a point beyond which it wasn't quite rational, basically. It's, you know, sort of like a religious conversion. And then, you know, basically as you go along and you watch what's happening and everything, you finally get disabused. You know, it was almost like what people would describe as joining a cult now. Mm. But, you know, in terms of the outlook on it and all that. But,
Well, let me move on for a moment.
Yeah, what do you think?
I mean, you can stay on until we get another caller, I suppose. But let me just do some things here. We are trying to raise money for KPFT so that this show and this station can stay on the air. The number to call for Pledge Central is 713-526-5738. I think it's safe to say that KPFT is the heart of liberal talk radio in this town. I don't think there's any place else you can get it. Of the 50-odd radio stations, AM and FM, in Metro Houston, half of them are owned by five or six companies, and none of them are liberal. Many of the rest are owned by religious groups. We are a beacon of free speech, liberal free speech mostly, but not exclusively, in this city. And we need your support to stay on the air so that you can continue to get the music, the local and regional music that you like, the talk radio that you like, the reach out to community groups, different ethnic and linguistic groups that we have in this community. We are very much community-based. Most of us are volunteers. I'm a volunteer. So we really need your support. 713-526-5738. Please call or go to kpft.org. I also want to point out that you can go to my website and go to links for a lot of the stuff I'm talking about and some stuff I don't get to at thinkwingradio.com. You can follow me on Twitter at thinkwingradio. And here's a thing that I really wanted to get to. I wanted to leave some time for this. The headline in the Washington Post is "Dispute over Gibraltar reveals hot-headedness of post-Brexit Britain." And here's the thing. This is sort of the sum up. On Friday, the European Union indicated that it would tacitly back Spain's claims on the territory of Gibraltar in its draft negotiation guidelines for Brexit. The document stipulates that, quote, no agreement between the EU and the United Kingdom may apply to the territory of Gibraltar without agreement between the Kingdom of Spain and the United Kingdom. In other words, London has to negotiate directly with Madrid on Gibraltar as part of the whole exiting. I mean, I'm telling you, man, the British non-binding freaking referendum. What the heck are they thinking? So anyhow, the wording was immediately lauded in Spain, and the British, the British Prime Minister called Fabian Picardo, who is Gibraltar's chief minister, on Sunday morning to say that the UK remained, quote, steadfastly committed to our support for Gibraltar, its people and its economy, and that May would defend, quote, the freely and democratically expressed wishes of its residents that made their desire to remain part of Britain clear. And there was a Conservative Party minister or member of parliament, Michael Howard. He took the rhetoric, as they say, up a few notches, saying that Britain would go to war against Spain for Gibraltar if necessary, just as Margaret Thatcher did against Argentina in 1982 over the Falklands. You know, this is the classic definition of shooting yourself in the foot. Leaves me speechless. Leaves me speechless what the British are doing to themselves. And to the extent that Putin's public opinion manipulation is at work here. I mean, Nigel Farage, I would consider him, I don't know if I could call him a traitor to the United Kingdom, but he certainly is not working for the better interests of the United Kingdom. What are your thoughts on that, Jerry? We have a couple of minutes here.
Well, my thinking on that is that that's sort of ridiculous. And
what part of it?
Oh, the Great Britain part of it. You know, obviously Gibraltar's much closer to, you know, Spain.
It's attached to Spain.
Great Britain. And if anything, if it's in anybody's territorial waters, it's probably theirs.
Well, here's the thing, though. According to the history of Gibraltar, there was a war, and then there was a treaty, and the treaty goes back to the 1700s. The vast majority of Gibraltans are British descended. They speak English. After 200 or 300 years, you know, even though they're attached to Spain, that in and of itself does not make them Spanish. And if the Spanish tried to take them over, they would end up with an insurgent population. I mean, they feel very strongly about it. There's another thing I want to mention. Apparently, according again to the Washington Post, the Democrats have secured enough votes to block the Gorsuch nomination to the Supreme Court, barring McConnell going for the so-called nuclear option. Senator Joe Manchin has said he would vote for Gorsuch. Indiana Senator Joe Donnelly, North Dakota Senator Heidi Heitkamp, these are Democrats, and Democratic Colorado Senator Michael Bennett all said that they would vote for Gorsuch, but that is not enough to pass the filibuster-proof threshold. So we are living in precarious times.
Well, this is what happens when you get the kind of ideological, extreme ideological divisions that we've got. And, you know, basically, if you really are committed to those positions at all costs, then in essence, you know, beyond a certain point, you make it extremely hard to run the U.S. government and make policy, in essence.
Okay, I got to let you go. I've only got 1 minute left, so take care, Jerry. Okay. Thanks so much for calling. Thanks. Remember, support KPFT. You can go to kpft.org, click on the donation image, or you can call right now, 713-526-5738. We've got Juan Flores coming up with Jazz Latino. And today's quote from St. Augustine. Grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Truer words in these times were never spoken. Everybody have a great week, and I'll speak to you next Monday. Support KPFT, kpft.org.
Did you just look down at your phone? You did it again, didn't you? You know, you're flying down the road in a 3-ton hunk of steel, and a text takes your eyes off the road for an average of 5 seconds. At 55 miles per hour, that's long enough to travel the length of a football field and cause some serious damage. Turn it off. Trust me, whatever it is, you'll live. Learn more at StopTextsStopWrecks.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. KPFT Houston.